From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Charlie Locke is a narrative journalist based in Portland. Thank you so much for being on the Oregon Grapevine.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
You write for a variety of publications, a variety of ways, articles, etc. Could you just launch into a little bit about that and that piece of your life and what the writing is that gives you meaning?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a freelance journalist. I write mostly for magazines. I'm a contributing writer at the New York Times Magazine, so write there a lot, but also write for The Atlantic and Wired, Bloomberg Businessweek. And I like to say that my beats in terms of journalism are growing up and growing old. So I write a lot about being young and being older. I am really grateful to get to spend a lot of my days talking to people who are maybe under 15 years old and over 75 years old. And I feel really lucky to have crafted that as kind of what I get to write about, because it's a sneaky way of actually just getting to write about everything. Those two age groups experience everything under the sun. They have, you know, they... Someone who's 10 and someone who's 95 both experience struggles with their family and crushes and friendship issues and concerns about the climate and thoughts about how the world could be different. You know, just everything that anyone else goes through. They're just people who happen to be a certain age in their lives right now. And I love writing about those populations because I think that so often media treats people in those age groups as really as kind of subjects of a story rather than people who have agency and are experts in their own life experiences. I think that so often, for example, stories about people in their 80s and 90s will either be about kind of a bleak story about how hard it is to be really isolated in a nursing home, treating these people as, again, kind of subjects, or a story about like 102-year-old grandma goes surfing or something, kind of like a kooky story. And I, not to knock either of those stories, but I really love just actually talking to people about what are their experiences like, how do they approach their everyday, what feels meaningful to them, what's exciting, what are they learning and thinking about in new ways right now. And the same thing is true for kids. They're not just people to be reported on as, you know, it is totally hard to be a kid and coming of age in the world that we live in right now, but also kids are full of wonder and full of urgency about what they're going through in their friend groups or what they're talking to their little brother about, or, you know, they're just really urgently alive, which is a great way to get to spend my working life.
Did you choose let's start with the under 15, because you were a 14-year-old wanting to write, or you had a child? How did that come about for you that piece of your writing life began?
I have always really loved talking to and working with and teaching kids and teenagers, and I've always tried to make that a part of my life through, you know, mentoring young writers when I was in college or teaching. In college, did a lot of kind of teaching summer programs, stuff like that. But I have worked as a journalist for I think about 15 years, and I had a number of staff jobs writing about different things. And at the start of the pandemic, the magazine where I was working folded, and we all got laid off. And I was casting around to figure out what kind of freelance stuff I could do until I could get another job. I now am so grateful. I've been freelancing for longer than I had any staff job, and I actually really like it more, but I didn't choose it. but I had a friend who had written for the New York Times kids section, they shut it down last year, but it used to be a section of the New York Times that was written for, they said, readers ages 8 to 13. So it was this really cool print-only section of the New York Times that was stories that are about young people for young people to read. And so I asked that friend if I could have her editor's contact information and pitch them one story. And it just kind of over a couple of years developed into a really regular. I wrote for them every month, I wrote for every issue. And at the same time, I was again just kind of casting around for work as people do after they lose a job. And I had an old boss was starting a podcast called 70 Over 70, which was a podcast where basically every episode of the show, he would interview, most of the podcast would be him, Max Linsky, interviewing someone over 70 years old who was famous. And for the first 5 or 10 minutes of the show, I would interview someone who was over 70 and was not famous. And that was just, I was again kind of just looking for work. It sounded interesting. So I started working on that in a, for 6 months or something, and that kind of developed into more. And by doing that, I realized that there are so many stories about older people who where their experiences really just aren't represented. And it was really meaningful, especially during the pandemic when we were all so isolated. I was just living in an apartment with my boyfriend and not talking. I was 30, I think, and was not talking to people very much. And suddenly I spent so much time talking to people who were in really different life stages from me, who were kind of outside of the scrum of the middle of life, which I feel like a lot of my friends and I are in, where you're figuring out who your partner's going to be, where you're going to live, if you're going to have kids, kind of all these big questions. And people who were able to be a little bit removed by that on either side of the age spectrum. And so in the pandemic, when every day felt really bleak and repetitive, I would talk to people who would say, I'd say, how are you doing? And they'd say either like, it's so cool. I got this new Lego set and I figured out how to build it into something that's totally different. And I'm really into building spaceships with my Lego sets, but I actually figured out how to build this crazy other thing and just kind of like be bubbling over with that. Or talk to someone who would say, my day is amazing. I just learned that you can watch opera from the British Opera on Netflix and it's incredible. It's so cool to be transported in this way. So just talking to people who were like, curious and earnest and really alive. I don't know if that, I feel like I went on too far from that,
That's okay. It's interesting. Has there been a story or a moment that maybe you went into it thinking one thing and you unexpectedly were surprised at this other thing that you carry with you?
oh, that's such a good question. Yeah, I mean, I think that part of the fun of these beats is I'm so often surprised. And I think I really try to go into reporting with a really open mind about what I'm going to learn. I'll have a subject, but go in and really be educated by the people that I'm talking to. I did a cover story for the New York Times Magazine, I think last year, that was about climate change and about what it's like to be a teenager if you live in a place that's already really devastated by climate change. And I went into it thinking this is going to be a way to write about how hard it is to come of age in. I mean, some of the young people I talked to a girl who, I think a 14-year-old who lives in Dhaka in Bangladesh, who can't really go outside because the pollution is so bad that her skin and ha her hair is falling out because the pollution's so bad, which if you are a teenage girl is just an impossible. I mean, for anyone, but it's the kind of the concerns of being a teenager in these places. And I was really struck by doing the interviews with teenagers for that, just kind of the long lens that they have on this. They're so thoughtful about what their future is going to look like, about what has already changed, about kind of mourning this world that they hear about from their parents or grandparents and don't get to experience. There was another girl who I interviewed for that project who lives in rural Peru and is from a community that lives by the side of a glacier, and their spiritual beliefs are very tied to this glacier, and it just is a huge part of daily life. And she talked about what it is like to mourn something that you never got to see. She hears from her grandparents who about what it was like in the 60s and 70s when the rivers were jumping with fish, and the glacier was covered in snow for much of the for the whole year, and it just isn't it hasn't been like that in her entire life. So kind of it's not only that climate change is looming, but that there have already been these kind of generational shifts. I think often with young people, I'm just really struck by how deeply thoughtful they already are about these big issues.
Have you, Charlie, always known that you were a writer?
No, I always knew that I was a reader. I've always really, really loved reading. And as a kid, that is what I spent much of my time doing. And I was really shy. And so I didn't ever consider something like journalism, where so much of the work is cold calling people and talking to strangers. And I never. I mean, I still wish that I was a fiction writer. I don't know where the ideas come from. A couple of my closest friends are novelists, and I'm very envious, but I don't have that in my brain. but I knew when I was a little kid, and certainly by high school or college, that I wanted to figure something out around stories. And I thought for a long time maybe that would be in book publishing or something. I just was trying to figure out how to do something where I got to spend a lot of time reading.
A noble pastime.
Yeah, totally, still. but I did not know that it would end up being journalism. I feel really, really lucky about that. Yeah.
Do you carry in your head some story ideas that are out there, or do you get assigned them, or a combination of those things?
Both. I always have a running list of stuff that I'm thinking about. You can't see it because this is audio, but next to my desk here, I have a big piece of paper with lots of post-it notes on it of different ideas. So this, just to ruin my give away these ideas, I'm just looking at my post-it notes. I have something like a master's sports competitions question mark. Masculinity camp question mark, dementia influencers question mark. So it's lots of just stuff that I haven't looked into any of those yet, but just things that I'm constantly thinking about. I have in the notes app on my phone, I often, when I'm just talking to people at a dinner party or at the farmer's market or whatever, and they say something that I feel like would be interesting to look into, I'll write it in the notes app on my phone. I'll just put the heading as idea and then write down some chicken scratch version of it. And then I every so often will search idea in my notes app and just kind of try and figure out which of those are viable. So a lot of it is just being really alert and aware and curious in your life about what's going on, what people are talking about, what feels meaningful to people, what's surprising. And then I do get assigned stories.
What advice do you have for emerging writers, for new writers, for young people?
Last week, I went and talked to a classroom of college students who all want to be journalists, and that is a very different conversation than I would have with someone who has been a journalist for 10 years and is kind of trying to figure out how to get to the next level in it. But for young aspiring writers, a lot of my advice is just to do it. You just need to write a lot and come up with a lot of ideas and not to be too precious about this is my magnum opus. It has to be published in the New Yorker. You know, if you want to be a journalist, you're going to be doing this for many years and you are going to have lots of ideas. And you most likely are not going to have your magnum opus investigative story when you are 22 years old. And so you just got to start doing it. So publish things where you can, make stuff with your friends. If you can't publish something in a paid magazine, make a zine with your friends or start a blog. You just need to build up the muscle of doing it and then be really curious about the world, both about what other people are going through and other people's careers. I mean, always if I get a cold email or LinkedIn message or something from a 22-year-old journalist, I'm always happy to talk to someone for 10 or 15 minutes on the phone. Every journalist I know, all my friends are the same way. So you can generally, if you have smart questions for someone, do a little research about them first. But people are really happy to kind of pass on the favor that they got when they were starting out.
What about the actual process of your writing? Did you take classes in high school and or in college? Do you have a practice where you get up every morning and you do a certain thing? How has that evolved for you and your studies and your doing of it?
Yeah. I took some writing classes in college, which were really meaningful for establishing a practice for me. I took this really wonderful class that I still think about a lot called Daily Themes, which I believe is still offered, which is basically the idea was every day in the semester you had to write 250 words in response to a particular prompt, and you were graded, you had a writing tutor who you met with, and you were graded mostly on whether you did it. And so it was really about, and we read a lot of short pieces, and we had a lecture class where we kind of learned about the craft of writing too. And most of the short pieces were nonfiction. It was like, go to a public space and write about someone that you see, describe them, or describe a room from your childhood house, like kind of short things like this, or some fictional ones too. But it was really useful for me to learn, okay, what time of day do I write well in? What are the conditions that are helpful for me for writing? How do I get past being precious and just do it? Because you just have to do it every single day. And those things are really helpful for me. I write best in the morning when my brain is clearest. When I have a big story I'm working on, I charge my cell phone in the other room and I wake up early and I make a cup of coffee and write for a couple hours before I look at turn my internet off on my computer. And just like before I engage with the world, I need to do a bunch of it before my head gets crowded. But I have friends and know people who write in really different ways in that way. The location isn't that important to me. I mean, I can do it kind of wherever I am. I just need to kind of cocoon myself in my work. But you know, so much of my work is talking to people too, that I really try and have different days for different things. And so I'll have days when I'm doing a bunch of interviews and working on stories in that way, and then days where I'm writing in the morning, and that's really what I'm doing. And then often I'll go on a walk or something to kind of clear my head and then do a bunch of research, like going through the notes app and looking at my ideas and kind of doing that lighter work in the afternoon.
And how many articles or publications or pieces are you working on at any given time?
It really depends. Often something like three at once, but the length of time I work on something can really, it really depends on what it is. There are some stories that I am assigned, and then 10 days later I have to turn in a draft, and that's really fast for me. And there are sometimes when I'm working on a story for a year, like that climate change and teenagers story, which had all these layers of, okay, which different issues are we going to talk about? How do I talk to scientists to figure out what we should focus on? How do you get in touch with a young person who ha so there were all these kind of different layers of the project. So often I really like having a mix of those different things where I'll have one thing that I'm working on that is due in 2 weeks. That's pretty quick turnaround, and something that is a kind of a much longer simmer, different stuff like that.
Do you have something or a practice or a place that inspires you in your life to do the work you do?
Being kind of under trees and out in nature is the thing that really grounds me. There's a redwood grove near where I live where I'll often, after doing a difficult interview, like interviewing a young person who's gone through this awful experience of climate change, just going outside and kind of feeling that. I grew up in Northern California, and being in eucalyptus and redwood trees really reminds me of kind of it just feels really calming and grounding to me. So doing that here is wonderful also. Do you feel like you have a physical space that provides that for you in your work?
I would answer the question in two ways. One is there a physical space? I'm a swimmer, so when I am swimming and I swim laps, I tend to use that as kind of my meditation. I've laughed with people in my family because I mean, yoga's fine and interesting, and I'm happy to do the stretching part, but I don't really care about the breathing part. So, and I know that's a big part of yoga, obviously. So when I am swimming, I can use it as kind of my meditation. I get a lot of my thinking done. I get a lot of my like conversations I might have with somebody done when I'm in the swimming pool. I also am inspired to do this because of similar to what you were saying about the world is a really crazy place. And the reason I started these interviews was because I know that there are people doing really creative and interesting things. And I want to give them a voice and want to tell, inspire people out there. So that is part of my inspiration, is just letting people know the world is not as crazy and horrible as it is. Actually, there are people functioning and continuing on. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great answer. And I mean, I think one of the real privileges of journalism for me, the world can feel so dark and sinister. And if you actually talk to people in an earnest, curious way about how they live, I almost always, perhaps always, find that it's a really affirming experience. That's why I love traveling too. I think if you just are curious about how people live in places that are really different than where you live, it's a reminder that the world is big and mostly people are good, which is a reminder we need.
Exactly. Exactly. Anything we haven't touched on here that you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
No, I don't think so. Thank you so much for the thoughtful questions.
Well, thank you so much for just the work you're doing, and people can find you. What's your webpage so people can jump to
find
you?
My website is my name, charleylock.com. That's charleylocke.com.
Great. Thank you so much, Charlie Locke, for being on the Oregon Grapevine. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.